Janet Moore.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Have a seat. So we'll go around and introduce ourselves and our where we're from, and then we will give you time to make an opening comment on your interest in being a trustee of Minsku. I'll start with the first question, and then we'll have about half an hour, 35 minutes of questions, and then time for a closing comment.
Okay. I'm Carl Crimmins from Champlin.
Nancy Black, Minneapolis.
Catherine, Minneapolis.
Sonia Honnodle from Moorhead.
Donnie Bailey, Westchester, Minnesota.
Dana Hassan on New Brighton.
Earl Rasmussen from Blaine, Minnesota.
Kent Eklund from St. Paul.
Carolyn Williams, St. Cloud.
Dave Larkin, Bemidji.
Yvonne Condell, Moorhead.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Tim Hibbs from Mapleville.
Janet Lexton from Lakeville.
John Dorn from Mankato.
And I'm Sally from TCU staff. Thank you all, and thank you for this opportunity.
Floor is yours.
The reason why I'm interested in serving on the Minsku board is I feel I bring a uniqueness to the board. You have a lot of expertise, as I've been reading all of the profiles of the board members. You have some strong representation from business and industry and other walks of life and some tremendous credentials. What I feel that I bring and add to the board would be the experiences from three areas, from the field of education, from which I have served for the last 38 years of my life, plus as a business owner. And I've also been heavily embedded in healthcare systems as a board member for the Benedictine Health System, of which I currently serve as chair, and the Fairview Ridges board in Burnsville, Minnesota. I also serve on other foundation boards, such as the Minnesota Association of School Administrators and the University of Wisconsin Superior Foundation Board. I certainly understand the challenges that boards such as the Minsku board faces with the limited resources and the multiple programs and the diversity and the need for providing enhanced educational programs because of the changing of the marketplace and our need for students to have a different skill set or enhanced skill sets in some areas. I feel I bring to this board an understanding of all of those issues, not only as a board member, but from the experience level of having served in all capacities in K-12 education, from a teacher to a principal to a superintendent, served with the Minsku system for a year at the Minnesota State Moorhead Institution as on a fixed-term position. I was there to aid in the program that offered licensures for students, aspiring leaders seeking certification as K-12 principals, superintendent, special education directors, and community ed directors. I have a strong understanding of the rural needs of Minnesota. 87% of the population of students that come into the Minsku system are Minnesota-based students. We have a low percentage of students, particularly from some students of color, that represent a lower population within our Minsku culture. And I believe that I have an understanding of those cultures. I believe I have an understanding of what it takes to entice more students into the system. Obviously, we need to go to them in many instances and make it more convenient for them to come into the world of not only staying in the K-12 public education system, but also entice them to come into any level of the Minsku system that they would have an opportunity to come into. So I think I understand the rural needs and I understand the urban needs by having been exposed and worked in all settings in public education and in higher ed. I would hope that that expertise would lend something to the Minsku board.
Great. Thank you. The first question relates to one of the first activities during the first year of any new trustee's life on the board, and that will be the selection of the next chancellor. Jim McCormick will retire June 30, 2011, publicly announced. And so one of the questions we were asked to ask candidates is your experience with leadership transitions, either from a board perspective or personal perspective. And what are some of the principles you've identified that make those successions work well?
Executive searches are never easy. Yes, I have gone through executive searches as a board member. I chaired the search committee. It was first getting a very good understanding of what the organization needed in an executive director, a new executive director. What was the strategic plan that the organization had in place, and how? What did we need in a new executive director in order to enhance the growth of that strategic plan and move it forward? You certainly want to look at the experienced base of person who is coming in as an executive director. One of the biggest things is when you do find which seems to be a fit on paper, you want to make sure that you've done your due diligence in doing some very good research and site visits on how the person actually performed in their position or positions in the past, and what their public relations were like, because that is a huge role in an executive director, such as one that would lead a college and university system, is public relations, understanding of the collaboration that we need with business and industry and education. From my other walk of life as a superintendent, I was involved as an employee on the interview committee when selecting a superintendent of schools. Again, it was looking at the strengths they brought to the table, how collaboratively they would work with existing staff, what new ideas they brought to the table, how did that fit with the strategic plan of the organization. Did we, as an organization, understand our needs well enough to know when we were questioning the new candidate, if the new candidate would assist us in our initiatives?
Great. Thank you. Marilyn.
Would you care to expand on the comment you made about enticing students into higher education, and once you've enticed them, how Minsky should support them?
Mm-hmm. All students, or are you talking about a subset?
I'm specifically speaking about students who might not normally enter higher education.
And that needs to start at quite a young age in high school, where they have packing their parachutes, so to speak, that they have the skills. They may not have the financial resources, and that, or they may not have the cultural support to seek higher education. And we as educators in the K-12 system need to begin to lay the groundwork for that and to help them identify their strengths and where they may fit into a higher education. Take the fear out of what's next. Looking at and also educating parents on the financial resources that would be most likely available to their child once they entered into a two-year or four-year college. I've always believed in reaching out to them, rather than expecting people to come to a counselor's office in a high school or a principal's office in a high school. It's reaching out to them and looking at what you see their talents and expertise to be, and then telling them about that, talking about that. That does work. But also it's the preparedness for their college program. And, of course, as you well know, we do have post-secondary options in the K-12 setting, where students have an opportunity to work towards college credit while they're still juniors and seniors in high school. Some take advantage of that and some don't. But it's also preparedness for that and informing them of the opportunity that they have prior to getting to college after high school graduation, that these types of courses would then be behind them, and they could look towards completing some of their other generals, but also start moving into their area of choice.
John?
Oh, thank you, and thank you for applying. Just following up a little bit more on another part of the comments that you made, you talked about selecting a chancellor, interviewing the candidates, and whatever. What understanding the needs of the system, and then what the needs, how well that person would meet those needs. What do you see as some of the needs of the system coming on board? What are some of the areas that you would think the strategic plan should cover, and the needs would be that you would set up as the criteria you'd want to evaluate and search for in a chancellor?
Well, I was reading back in the minutes, and I think it was of 2007, might have been 2008, where there was a statement made by one of the board members about where are we going? What do we need to look like in the future? I didn't see any strategic plan that articulated the initiatives, or maybe I didn't look deeply enough into the website in order to really know that. I found the high points of the higher ed and what the Minsky system aspired to be, and that's to be a high-level program that's offering substantially rigorous programs for students, preparing them for business and industry, education, healthcare, whatever their fields may be. I think with the system, and we are greatest population are our Minnesota students, a candidate who may come from out of state is to understand who we are and what we need to become. I couldn't articulate for you at this time because I have great respect for the Minsky system, and I do think they offer top-shelf programming. So I would not be able to respond to you at this time where I would see any voids in the system. But I know working at the university, we were grappling with what type of online programming we should begin to offer and how much of it. I see that 66,000 students were engaged in online learning with the Minsky system, which is a significant number, and that would be students that would reach beyond Minnesota. Where does that fall in relationship to the infrastructure? We have 855 buildings, and where does online learning the continuation of the infrastructure fall in relationship to the direction where we need to go? Does online learning satisfy the executive functioning skills that we need to know about people before we send them out into the industry? So to answer your question specifically, I would certainly be looking at a chancellor who would have the initiative to understand our culture, the direction that we perceive to be going at this time. And if we are grappling with situations of more investment in a two-year college versus more investment in a four-year college, and then what are we doing about our graduate programs? 3.9% of our total population in graduate programs? That seems a little bit odd to me, which would be an area that I think that we would think about. And how would that person enhance that particular growth?
Janet,
given the financial woes, so to speak, of the state and monies that are not, or revenues that are not flowing into education, at least higher education these days, how would you address this shortage of revenue, or actually how would you address the issue of that without compromising, you know, the quality of our programs and adding more burdens on onto the students via tuition or fees?
I'm just going to back up. When I was a superintendent of schools, there was only so many paper clips we could cut before we needed to begin looking at programs. 85% of your budget, Minsky is no different than a K-12 system where 85% of your budget is people. There is a point in time when you have no choice but to look at programs and people. With any program that you cut, you have taken something away. If the program weren't important, you wouldn't have had it there in the first place, if it wasn't meeting some need. That becomes a very difficult choice about what programs do you cut, what departments do you cut. You're going to erode into programs. You're going to diminish the capacity of the program no matter what you do with them. It becomes a choice. And none of them are good choices. It's just a choice that you are forced to make based upon the revenue constraints, the financial constraints. And there is, in my professional opinion, there is no good answer to cutting programs and staff, because I have never seen that we have too much fat in our programs. But it does come down to choice. There, you get a student pays a dollar, the state pays a dollar. Well, you have $634 million that comes in from tuition. You have another $634 million approximately that comes in from state. I didn't know where the other $455 million came from. I wasn't clear on that, if that was philanthropic efforts or if it was business and industry. I wasn't sure where that other monies were coming. But $1.8 million is not enough money to cover the programs, the positions, the sites, money have you're embedded in 47 different communities. With 37 institutions, 25 of which are technical colleges, all have financial and economic impact on the communities in which they are located. There is no good answer to that one. It's a matter of it's hard choices, and those are the hardest choices that a board needs to face. But to make those choices, I think there are some major factors that need to be looked at. You know, how can some programs be consolidated, if they can be? What programs could be offered in a different way? What partnerships could we interest to support some of the programs? If we have certain programs that are of value to business and industry, is there a way to support them? Are there grants? I'm not a fond lover of grants. That's soft money. It goes away over time, and especially if you're hiring people. People get, you find good leaders to lead that initiative, and then it goes away after the grant money goes away. Those are all very, very hard choices. But I guess we have to make our best educated. We have to become educated in it. We have to have good reason and rationale. We can't fly by the seat of our pants. We have to have reason for doing what we're doing and have examined every aspect of how can we keep that program alive, by what type of other collaborative efforts can we put into that decision.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you. Nancy?
Hi, Janet. You said that you were surprised by the 3.9 doctoral population.
It wasn't doctoral. It was post-undergrad. It would have been students in the master's and master's level program or any program that would have been beyond the bachelor's degree.
And the percentage was 3.9?
3.9%.
That's possible.
It may not be. Now, I have the facts in here, and I was really cruising through some of that very quickly, and I was surprised at that number, and uh-huh. I was going to go back and look at it and embed my thoughts into it a little bit more. But I don't know where the graduate programs are in relation to undergrad, but
undergrad, I saw that we're about 389,000 students in the 07-08 on website.
Yeah,
and I can grab that. I can look at it real quick.
No, I was just surprised, too.
But if that is true, then that needs to come up a notch as well.
Okay. I was wondering about your position on it. Sometimes when Minsky puts out those numbers, it also includes registrations in continuing education, customized training. So I'm not sure about that figure. But, you know, we've tried to be innovative within the Minsky system and serve the needs of the state. And one of the ways we've done this, and you might know about this, is the Doctorate of Nursing,
yes.
And Morehead is a part of that. So there's four institutions who are involved to come together so that we can offer this opportunity, which is obviously needed.
Yes.
The problem now is, given the resource crisis, one of the institutions is no longer admitting students. How do you think we should handle situations with doctoral programs? I mean, we're trying. We do PSEO, as you well know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We do continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
We do customized. We do undergraduate. There are 32 institutions. Now we've gone into doctorates in the last 3 years.
Yes.
Do you think we can continue to sustain that, or do you have any ideas about the innovation? I mean, I thought the consortium was a good idea. Now I'm thinking it's not so good. What do you think?
Maybe talking to the wrong person, because I'm pro-education all the way from K through a postdoctorate. So to turn away students is, I would just need to know more information about why. What is the capacity of the department staff for and the rigor that's being offered in those programs? Is it limited to 12 or 15 or 18 for a particular reason? Is it because of the staff resources? Is it because of I wouldn't know what those other reasons were. I know with my graduate program, they limited it to 18. They weeded out 6. There were 12 of us left. We had very limited instructors within that particular department, and the rigor in which the program demanded, that was probably pushing them to the max to have that level of rigorous programming and to have that number of students. Then when you get into the theses and the doctoral dissertations, that is all research that your staff is embedded in as well. All of that takes an enormous amount of time and commitment on everyone's part. So that may limit the amount of students that they may feel they can provide a quality and enriched program.
I didn't expect you to wave a magic wand, if only you would, but thank you for your response.
Yes, we are not looking for magic wands. Right. Good. Marilyn.
What do you see as the workforce issues in the state, and how can Minsky work at addressing those issues?
I think we need to pay attention to the workforce. With, 18 out of 20 jobs now require some discipline of math and science. We need to pay attention to that. I think that was probably, it is the governor's initiative. I know it's high on the commissioner of education's radar that we have more rigor that's introduced at the high school level for math and science in preparation for students to go into more science, engineering, and technology. Our world is different than what it was a few years ago, as we all well know, that we have and our the reason for the initiative for the collaboratives between our Minnesota Business Partnerships, our Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, our Minnesota Department of Education, all means that we have to pay attention to the workforce and how we're preparing them for that workforce. If 18 out of 20 jobs require a discipline of math and science, and that's not a shallow discipline in math and science. Our business and industry folks are expecting our students coming out of college ready to meet the challenges of their business expectations. They're in the business to make money, and they rely upon these folks to provide them with the services and the tasks that need to be completed. So it's been a good thing to get this business and education partnership moving forward. And I think by that, we have paid attention to what the needs are in the workforce. Mm-hmm. 80% of our jobs now require school beyond high school, which makes me very concerned about 36,000 students in the Minsky system, 1.5% Native American. Where do they fit in the grand scheme? Do they finish? Don't they finish? And if 80% of our jobs that people are applying for require something beyond high school, we need to pay attention to all students and how their preparedness is for that workforce.
Thank you very much.
Carolyn?
She answered my question. I wanted to ask you about STEM initiatives. What is your knowledge about that?
Would you like to hear more about it?
Yes.
Okay. STEM grew out of the late 90s, maybe early 2000s, when, you know, we were really looking at, we're competing against a global market. We're just not competing against schools within the U.S. We had countries that were surpassing us in the areas of math and science. And our world is becoming highly more technical, and we need people that have need to engage in more rigor in the math and science area, preparing them for the rigor that they would be meeting at a university level, to prepare them for the industry of engineering and technology. That initiative is still high on the radar, and it needs to be. One component that's been added as something else that's been needed as greatly as that has been more foreign language, better understanding of many of our students. Our white Caucasian students are not introduced to languages at an early age. Yet our students of color, many of them in the countries from which they come to America from, are introduced to English at a very early age.
True.
So we are not keeping up in that area either. Is there something more specific I can answer? On STEM? Okay, for you.
Zineb?
Hi. since you have been in the K-12 education, and there is this connection between K-12 and higher education, in terms of mainly about the achievement gap of students of color, and of course those are the future workforce of Minnesota, mainly because of the demographic changes, we will be having more students of color in the future. Who would probably, some of them would go to higher education. So how would you make that connection? Because Minsky depends on how many students graduate from high schools to go to college. Mm-hmm. So how would you kind of work on that to have more students actually go to Minsky, or what could Minsky do and K-12 together in order to close the achievement gap?
Well, I think part of that initiative began with the P16 discussion about, students don't end their educational career when they walk the stage in grade 12 with a high school diploma. It continues on. Those are still discussions that are going on, and I think they're good discussions because that does invite more students of all walks of life to enter into the college area, but that's not answering your question specifically. I think high schools and all schools are working very hard to close the achievement gap, and they're grappling with that. And part of it is they're offering programs for all students. Financial constraints, again, force the K-12 system to have more students more students engaged in classroom instruction where they actually could be potentially better served in smaller groups. They may have limited English speaking skills, in which limit their rate of progress in some of our educational programs, and we need to focus better on how we can provide some additional services. And I'm not talking about remediation. I'm just talking about different services to meet the culture of the students in which we serve. I don't think we're there yet. We're trying, but we're not. We have schools. We have choice schools now. We have magnet schools that are all in the attempt to offer parents different choices for tapping into the learning styles and the cultural needs of various students. We're not there yet. We have a long way to go before we can meet the achievement gap. We need to continue to work towards that and never keep that off of our radar. But to answer the link between high school, again, we need to be working potentially much harder at our high school level on enticing our students, looking at their strengths, looking at their interests, their cultural differences, where is it that they want to go in life, and paying attention to that versus some of the other things that we're paying attention to. And also, what's holding them back from, is it their culture? Is it the socioeconomic differences? Is it the lack of interest of education within the home in some circumstances where they feel they don't have a chance? We need to look beyond and into what may be interfering in the child's life. I'm very big into mental health. I am a psychologist first before I was a superintendent of schools. So I look at what's behind the scene and what would be students that could be depressed, students that potentially aren't learning for certain reasons. That would be medical, it could be nutrition, it could be a variety of reasons, but it's understanding the student. And are we taking the time to understand the students and their needs and then to pack their parachutes so that they can go to college and they can do well and they can get into the world of work and they can make a difference? I believe we're trying, but are we trying hard enough? I think some people think we do, but we have to try hard.
Earl?
In high school, you don't require languages?
Yeah, we do. Yes, there are. There are languages. There isn't the same language curriculum offered in all high schools. Mm-hmm. Some offer French, some offer German, some offer Spanish. There are a variety of languages that are offered. The requirement is for one language, one foreign language.
Oh, okay, so they are.
There is a requirement, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it wouldn't be 4 years of college or 4 years of foreign language that they would be.
I had 2 years of Latin, 2 years of French in high school, and then 2 years in Spanish in college. So, mm-hmm. But I guess
and that's more than most.
Robin?
Can you describe your leadership style or work style, and then how that will flow within a group of other board members or trustees, mm-hmm. and being effective?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I am one who does her homework. When you are a board member, it is your responsibility to come to the board prepared and to do above and beyond the reading of the packet, the board packet. It's to also potentially find out more information about certain topics that would be. And your packets, I know, are the standard packets of you're dealing with budget, finance, board policy. That's what a governance body does. But we would all have potentially grappling with, as we've talked about earlier, the finances, the programs, and those types of things. A board member needs to be a good listener, first of all, to find out what is the frame of reference from which other people are coming from, because we all come from different walks of life. And it's to understand those individual differences and to listen to one another from the viewpoints from which we come from, and how that ties into the research that we've done and the board packet that we have before us. We have to be strong in our ability and our confidence to articulate statements that we may need to say, that other people may need to hear, about our position on certain areas of interest pertaining to the board, that we have the confidence to do that. It doesn't mean that particular opinion or comment is right, but it may need to be one that is laid out before the board members. So I am a good listener. I am a good researcher. I am a good preparer. I do speak with confidence if there's information that I believe we need to know more than what we have. To have the confidence to ask other people from why they're coming from that particular point of view, to respect that point of view, that we're not all going to be on the same page. We're not all going to have the same passion, but we need to respect each other's individual differences. We need to know how to read one another, both non-verbally and verbally. And to respect that as well. And when we've wrestled with all of the decisions that need to be wrestled with, in the end, we speak with one voice.
Thank you. Any other questions? Well, I'll go to the last one then. We tell all of the candidates that the roughly 40 hours a month is about what it takes to be a good member. That is not all daytime hours. That includes a lot of reading of the packets and evening and weekend reading and preparing. Meetings are held about 2 days a month. Some take some months off. And then there's some committee work and some travel to ensure that you get a feel for the breadth of the Minsky system across the state and within the metro area. How does that fit into your schedule and your ability to meet that?
Yes, I understood the requirements before I applied for this position, and I felt that I can meet those requirements.
Okay, great.
And would be honored to do so.
Great. Then it's time for any final comments you'd want to make and on behalf of your candidacy.
Well, I'm delighted to be here for the opportunity. I certainly hope that I am one that you will consider to be selected for a board position. I believe that because of my experience in owning businesses and my 37 years of experience in education, which has included higher ed, and my involvement on boards, primarily with healthcare, and we have healthcare programs within the MinSCU system that are very important to us. My knowledge about the bridge that we need to build in a stronger way between K-12 education and higher ed, the need that we have for paying attention to our diverse population, and bringing more students of color and other ethnicities into the culture of MinSCU is very important, and that we continue to move on as maintaining our position as the fifth in the nation with higher education, and that we would step up a notch or two in that area. So I'm very committed to MinSCU. I'm very committed to education in Minnesota. My whole life has been evolved around education, and I've been proud of that and would like to continue to serve in this capacity. So I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Great.
Thank you.
Sally, will the next candidate be calling in?
Yes.
Okay.